Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. If you're looking for a car, they have low rates and pre-approvals that are good for 90 days, so you can know what you can afford while you shop. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Marcus, Melanie, how are you guys doing today?
Hi.
Blessed and unstoppable, brother. How was your holiday?
Oh, holiday was good, man. Chilled, planted.
And you had a birthday.
I planted a tree. Let's start over.
Let's back this up, man. You planted a tree?
I planted a tree.
Of knowledge?
Of knowledge.
Or of?
It was an actual tree.
Okay.
It was a very expensive. I didn't know how much trees cost, by the way. Don't buy trees.
They are expensive.
They're absurdly expensive. And it was not even a fancy tree. It was just a, what are those trees called? Crepe myrtle. $500.
Well, how big was it?
45 gallons. I didn't know that was how much
tree cost.
Why would
you buy a 45-gallon crepe myrtle? They grow so fast.
Yeah, that's what everyone has been telling me the last couple of days.
Yeah, that's the stupidest purchase you've ever made.
Probably not the stupidest.
You get a receipt?
It's on the list. Yeah, right. It's on the list.
That's the fastest growing tree there is, and you could have bought a 10-gallon one.
Man, we got a bunch of them out here growing.
Yeah. You could have plucked one.
As a matter of fact, I need it removed. So you just take it.
I got a Patreon question.
Sure.
At what age did you realize your idol was just human, and who are they, and what happened that kind of made you realize that, and when I say idol, you know, like your role model or your hero, whatever it may be?
Spider-Man for you, right, babe?
Yeah, but he was my childhood. I mean, I never looked at anything as other than.
I don't know if I can answer that. Can you answer that?
I mean, I've met so many fascinating people over the years that I think that answer to that question probably keeps changing from period to period. I mean, if you had asked me the same question perhaps 20 years ago, I would have a different answer. But 15 years ago, I would say perhaps Sri Sri, the spiritual teacher who taught me how to breathe and meditate, perhaps he would be that, you know. The answer keeps changing, to be frank.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I think because they're temporary. And as you grow up, it's not that you stop loving them or you just look at them as differently. You just grow into something else. Someone else feels that. Because there's people I run into that I didn't know about that literally I think they're superhuman. I'd have never expected that. I wouldn't even have guessed it. But then you see them capable of something, you're like, okay, wow, that's cool. And it's just the further you travel, the more you learn concept. And I think that kind of changes as you grow.
Yeah, I think coming into it with an expectation too that, I don't know, for me at least, I've never had an idol per se. I've always had an expectation that people were human from the get-go and that I could just work as hard as them to get to that level. So maybe just kind of taking a different approach to the people we look up to.
I think it's about inspiration, frankly. I mean, when I read Marcus's story, it was nothing short of like, oh my goodness, how does one wade through this? How does one move through this? And, you know, what more is there to what if that doesn't inspire one, then what does? So I guess that as you live and learn, as you see, as you meet these amazing people, I guess that definition does keep changing.
I don't know if we're going deep early, but
take it.
That was the one thing is a lot of the stories that I heard, and I swear, bro, we were laughing about this the other day, me and some of the guys that I've been into combat with. The stories that we heard from the guys below us that were teaching us were kind of, I mean, they told those stories so hardcore that we went in it with everything we had. And then when we got back, they were kind of like, man, we messed with y'all a little bit on some of those. I was like, well, good Lord, I wouldn't have gone near as hard and as fast if I wasn't trying to impress y'all. You know what I mean? So there's that when someone goes through something and they turn around and tell that story and that inspirational, it inspires you. I get that. I've always had that. I mean, that's kind of what still keeps me going. And when I would go down and get beat down, just the stand-up part is like I could always think about y'all, and it was like a little push. For whatever reason, I know this sounds weird, man, but at the last minute when I was thinking I couldn't take anymore, I would fall forward kind of like a little nudge. Like, hey, there, you know, we're nudging you. Keep going. And but yeah, it's
tough. That's how you keep raising bar for the rest of us who you're looking at, who look up to you and then say, wow, if he can do it, there's a human possibility that perhaps I can get there someday.
I think mine are super, like, traditional. My great grandmothers and my grandmothers are who I want to be. Like, yeah. That's
beautiful because you still have the family tradition in the line and they pass that down. Yeah. Like the people who don't have that, like when the family split up or someone dies, mm-hmm. or you come into this world without that.
Yeah.
If we somehow swing that up, because they are, that's the crazy part, is they are part of the foundation, they are part of the lineage, and they do have that story, just no one's told them.
Yeah. I still have all of my grandparents, so they're really important to me, and they are who I want to be like. They're who inspire me.
What a great, deep, thoughtful question.
He started it.
Yeah.
Patreon. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Patreon. Thank you. Hey, if you want to check out our Patreon and all we have going on there, head over to patreon.com/teamneverquit. We have exclusive access to the show, behind the scenes content. We're about to start a community, like a huge forum. We have a lot of stuff cool in progress in the works. So y'all check that out, patreon.com/teamneverquit. We have got a great guest in store, and I'm going to do my best to pronounce the name right. Kushal Choksi is an investment analyst turned entrepreneur, 9/11 survivor, and author. His new book, On a Wing and a Prayer, chronicles his narrow escape from the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001, and the emotional journey towards redemption that followed. Welcome to the show, Kushal.
Thank you, guys. It's an honor, absolute honor to be here with you all.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, man. I mean, the entire story, from, and especially what you do now, it's kind of important in our lives as well. So
we do a lot of meditating now. So we're really, you have a lot of backstory, but we are excited to hear about what you do now.
Yeah, because we do have the anniversary coming up, 20 years, and still kind of going on. So let's back it all up. Let's back it up. Again, thank you again for being here. We'll talk about your book and we'll get into this story, man. But I'm just fascinated by the whole thing. I want to hear a lot about the breathing and all that stuff as well. So please, if you wouldn't mind sharing it with us and our listeners.
Absolutely. I'll follow your lead. Take me wherever you want.
Perfect. So why don't you start by kind of set the stage for your 9/11 experience. Why were you in New York City? What were you doing there? What was your career, your background, all of that?
I came to New York City from in 2000, year 2000. I began working on Wall Street. I graduated from Pittsburgh, went to school there. Before that, I was in India. That's where I grew up. So New York was, by all practical purposes, was the first big city that I ever saw. That's something that really took me by, it swept me off my feet and carried me. And I was...
So explain that, because are you from the country? I don't mean, that's a beautiful way to say that. And a lot of people, when they talk about America, there's a feeling you get when you come here for seeing it for the first time. And you grew up in the country or in the town?
In India.
In India.
Well, it was a small town. It was a small town. It was a small town that, called Ahmedabad, probably no one really... It's now there. Look, if you compare, no town in India is a small town anymore. It still has millions of people, but comparatively, it's a very, very small town on the map, geographically. But yeah, I mean, it was, I'm talking about my childhood in a very small place, not enough exposure, no internet. You know, it's like a carefree childhood, like pretty much like country living. And I like how you said, you know, I came here to live, you know, to pursue the American dream. You know, to me, in my mind, America was that land of free, that where I could just go and apply and just become whoever I wanted. You know, that was like a very ripe field of opportunities, and that brought me to New York. And I started working on Wall Street on a trading desk. I had a math and finance major, so I like numbers, and I started working there. And I was really loving it. I was moving very fast up in my career, up the corporate ladder. I was enjoying what I was doing. It was hard work. It was stressful, but I thought that was the call of the age. And if I wanted to become successful, that's what I had to do. So at some point of time, I actually really even stopped asking why I was doing what I was doing. I was just swept in to so hard in that current of time. And sort of days were blurring into weeks, and weeks were blurring into months, but I was just flowing with it, flowing with the flow, as they call it.
During that time, it was fast paced. I mean, it's always fast paced there, but during that time, there was a lot going on. I mean, just the life, when you say the lifestyle, because it does, it changes. Like every 9 years, there's a shift or something. But the way we grew up and the way they're growing up at the age we were at is not the same. And that's, as you get older and you look back and you see that, it's pretty amazing. But yeah, I just remember back in those in 01 and, or 2001, everything was going real fast.
Yes, this was, and especially we were just coming off of the dot-com boom, right? So there was a lot of abundance in the economy. There was just, people were on a natural high. People were just like, yes, we are unstoppable. We are invincible. And Wall Street being that epitome of that capitalism, you could even feel it even more there. That alpha culture was like, you know, radiating at its full possible.
I remember that.
That was also when cell phones started to become abundant. Like everybody was getting a cell phone at that time. Like before that, it was really a time period where only the super rich would have it, or super important people would have them, like the big bag phones. But around, because I think I got my first cell phone in 2001. So that was really around that time period where like every single, it didn't matter who you were, you had one, but it was right on the brink of that new era.
Yes. Yes.
And there was definitely a switch. That's when like the 2000s rolled around.
That is a legit change of the world.
Yeah.
When everyone got a cell phone.
Everything changed.
Working 24 hours a day.
Yeah. That feeling, that whole feeling.
Yeah. You go from working just from 8 to 5 to always having to answer your phone, no matter what time of day it is. It changed our lifestyle, our culture, our work culture forever.
No, you're right. That was one pivotal change. And probably within another year came this, or we were hit by this, another monumental event that perhaps changed the fabric of our country and everything that we stood for and everything that we knew or we cared for changed forever. Mm-hmm. And here I was in the eye of the storm on that fateful Tuesday morning on September 11, 2001.
Let's hear about that. What did you do that morning before you even got to work? Did you have any bad intuition or anything?
You know, I was so caught up in my own world that it was just another work day for me, you know, to get to the trading desk, wake up early morning, you know, get to work. And on your way to work, you're processing things. How are you going to, you know, do things that'll make some money here and there. They'll do, you know, that thing that constantly wired up mine was on that move in that morning. And that, in that way, that morning was no different from any other morning. I very clearly remember I was thinking about what I had to do. I had to make a presentation. I was just, all these thoughts were going on in my mind. I was a little late to work that day. So I was, on one hand, I was, you know, typing up a quick message on that QWERTY keyboard to my team. And as I'm navigating through this noise in my mind, there was a huge bang. There was a huge sound that kind of shook me up. You know, that was like a wake-up call. It was just not an alarm sound, but it was a sound that shook me up. It woke me up. It was so loud that the chatter in my mind just settled down for a second. I just, what just happened? And within few seconds, just a pandemonium started.
Where were you? What building?
I was in the mezzanine floor in the North Tower. And, you know, people started running around. Nobody knew what had happened. I remember somebody on that big phone telling, you know, screaming that a bomb has gone off. Clearly, no one knew.
So everyone was just running, and people were saying different things, right? That's pandemonium, kind of chaos. It's like, what direction do you run?
Absolute chaos. Yeah. Yes, Marcus. There was no voice of reason. There was no way I could say, hey, do you know what's happening? Because nobody knew, and it was just in all directions. People were just running. I never experienced an emotion like that in that moment. You know, I very clearly remember there was one woman who fell, and people on that fight or flight response in that moment, they were just, instead of helping her, they were just trampling over her and running. And I'm like, what is happening? You know, it was just, you know, sometimes you get into that phase. It's like, I'm not programmed to see things like this. I've never seen anything like this. And in that moment, I just thought, I'll just move away from this. So I was walking towards the main entrance. The lobby was on Church Street, one of the entrances. And as I go there, there's a security person saying, just go back in. It's not safe outside, because it was raining, the cement chips and that all the gray haze was there.
Yeah, outside. It was like something out of a movie, right? I mean, things falling from out of the sky.
Exactly. It was like an apocalypse that you've seen only in the movies, like that you perhaps have seen something like that, you know, in your real life. Yeah. But I had never seen anything like that before, Marcus, to be frank. And when I saw all these things coming, you know, I was like, well, you know, perhaps it's right. Maybe I should go in. The guy was saying, just go and stay in the center of the building, stay in the core of the building, or go back to your desk. And there was a voice from behind just found my shoulder, tapped me and says, let's not listen to him. Let's just go out. Let's just run. And I don't know what it was. It had in my book, I talk about it. It has, I literally put it in these words, that it had a conviction of a Marine Corps leader. It had that. I'm like,
it has
okay,
some authority.
It's authority. Right, it's conviction. Yeah. It's confidence. And I just left. I left the building following his lead. And when I came out, I look up and I see this huge gaping hole in the facade of the building. And I was like, how does this even really happen? You know, and somebody was at that time saying there's a plane that has hit the building. And I'm like, could a plane would have made a wrong left turn on its way down to LaGuardia? What happened? And as I'm processing this, from the left corner of my eye, another aircraft just comes and just rams into the South Tower, spitting out a huge ball of fire on the other side, which is just coming down on us where we are. And that, I thought, was now it felt like it was deliberate. There was something at, you know, a menace at work here. And
because you couldn't see the plane, right? From the first vantage when you walked out, it was encapsulated in the first tower.
Yes, I couldn't see the plane. It was just somebody was talking there.
I remember on the news when we were watching it, they thought it was because you could just see some smoke coming out of, which has happened before. Someone tried to fly or did fly a little plane into it or somewhere around it. So that's what everyone was thinking. And the hole, when you saw the hole, you didn't think giant aircraft.
Yeah.
Oh, and I used to work on Windows on the World. Like for 3 months, I spent a lot of time there before, just a few months before this event. So Windows on the World was a meeting space, a banquet hall on the 107th floor. And so we would see the planes at eye level going down, you know, to land to either JFK or LaGuardia. And I thought, could something have gone amiss here? You couldn't fathom, you couldn't conceive that somebody can just take a plane and drive into or fly into the building, right?
My gosh.
Yeah, when you say it now, is 20 years, we were kind of joking about this. Like, there'll probably be a day when you get on an aircraft and if there's a human flying it, they'll be like, what's going on here? Why is there a human flying this aircraft? But as strange as that may sound, but back then it's, especially those big jets. I mean, turning those things down, I mean, that was something. I remember that. It shook the world for sure.
So you're on the ground, you're looking up. Did you actually visibly see the plane hit the South Tower?
Yes, right in front of my eyes. It was just, I actually see it just go through the building like a knife goes through the melted slab of butter, like just go in. And
I mean, that had to be the most unbelievable thing to see in front of your face, like watching a, I can't even imagine. I mean, I've seen some crazy stuff, but standing next to that,
just the
because
size.
The two opposites. Yeah, that's not, just the size in your mind, building. You don't even put that together, that's supposed, those two things don't, not supposed to go together, right? And when
correct.
They do.
And that ear splitting sound, A, when the jet is too low, there's a sound of the engine, and that sound when it just goes into something so rock solid and hard.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
There's no sound like it when metal starts screaming, for sure. And that, when those engines start gulping for air, like, you know, you hear all that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what went next? You have me on my edge of my seat. What happened next for you?
I don't want this to be too graphic, guys. So please tell me if, you know, I'm going too much in the detail. I don't want to trigger anyone else.
Come on, but
I just, since you started asking.
Nothing's too graphic. I live with this man.
And I, in that moment, I thought, okay, now this was something absurd. I needed to just walk away from it. So I started walking down the street I was standing on. So just started walking down the Liberty Street, down the Maiden Lane. And as I'm walking, I'm looking back, walking, I hear this loud noise, and suddenly people started screaming. And I look back, and there's this huge cloud of dust and debris and smoke is... And if you've been to Lower Manhattan, there are these narrow alleys, narrow streets and tall buildings. So this dust and cloud is coming through it, like because the North Tower had just started collapsing. And that dust that arose, that smoke cloud was just coming through it and engulfing everything and everyone on its way. So it was like, I look back and this is coming, and I start to run to see if I can outrun it. And right at the end of the island, right on the east side of the island, there's a slip. It's called Pier 11, and there's a commuter ferry's come there, and there's a commuter ferry pulling out, and the gangway had already been pulled in, and the captain who sees me running towards him, he just stops for a second, although the boat has pulled out a little bit, a couple of feet outside the slip, and I just gather all the strength and I just leap onto that boat, and the boat pulls out, and that cloud just comes so close, but it doesn't come that far. We've pulled out by then, and within 2 minutes, the entire Manhattan skyline is covered in that
dust,
hazy dust and smoke. And I realized that I was perhaps the last person to leave on the last boat that left the island that day. And I had become a statistic. In that moment, I had become a 9/11 survivor. Like, I now a badge on me. That was the first time it hit me what had happened.
But also, I mean, the chaos. That's another thing, is because we couldn't get in touch with anybody. No one had any idea who was alive and who was dead.
No. And as
that's how
luck
you got,
would
that's
have
how,
it,
that's, how,
well,
that's why everyone
phone.
Was affected in the country.
Yes.
It's because no one could communicate with each other, so everyone felt the same kind of tension at the same time.
Absolutely. And
that,
my parents
that
back
rarely
home.
Happens. You, very rarely do you get a moment where everybody in the country mm-hmm. felt something the same way at the same time.
Yeah.
That's why that's another you're one of those so, changing events.
You're so right. You're so right. I clearly remember, even today, whoever I met has had their own 9/11, wherever they were in the country. You know, I had mine from the buildings. They had somewhere on the TV. They were somewhere. Wherever they were, they had their own version of 9/11. And you're right. It affected all of us.
It's crazy because it almost hit every emotion, like all the way to where y'all were, where we were going through it. So the chaos and the fear over to where, all the way on the other side of the end to us, where we were already pissed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that inside is like America just took a big old deep breath, right? Just got punched and went, whew, and inhale and exhale. And then everyone felt it.
Totally. Totally.
I was a single mom. I was like 21 years old or something like that. And I had just dropped off my son, my 3-year-old, at daycare. And I was on my way to school. And I was in the Whataburger parking lot listening to the radio. And they cut the radio to tell about the first plane. But they said that it was probably a mistake. But for some reason, in Dallas, Texas, they were... you know, that was a cut to the music and on the radio. And then as I'm in the line at Whataburger getting my breakfast taquitos, the second plane hit. And so the news guy that was talking pauses and then he says, "This is an attack." And it was one of those moments. I didn't ever think an attack would happen on America. And I was so young. But I remember the lady handing me the receipt and I'm just looking at her like, what the heck is going to happen now? And I kept that receipt for the longest time because it had the exact timestamp of the second plane hitting. And I don't know where it is now, but it was even little old me in Dallas, Texas, I had, you know, no idea. I didn't know no one in New York City or anything, but it was just that moment like, the world is about to change. It was really eerie.
Oh yeah. Everyone felt it because everyone's attention shifted towards it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you say
how we would respond to it in that moment. Everybody's looking at us.
Yeah.
This has got to be a major turning point in your life. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, and wait, where'd the boat take you? Like, yeah, I want to hear more about the details of that day. Like, you get on the boat.
Yeah,
it
was like the last ship. I mean, yeah, you guys probably ported out there for a little while.
Yeah, the boat was floating. Like, it turned around the island.
I mean, because I had the whole, you jump into the last boat. I've been in a situation where I was the last man coming in. It's something.
I mean, you only realize that long after that happened.
Like, sure. Wow. Absolutely, 100%.
In that moment, it's just the fight for survival, I guess. It's just the dash for survival, if you will, in my case.
Was there a lot of people on that boat?
There were a few, yes. There were a few.
Were y'all all just in shock, or were you talking about possible scenarios? Or
there was if a pin dropped on that boat, you could hear it. Nobody was talking. People were silent. The phone network had anyway collapsed, so nobody could contact anyone, so there were no cell phones ringing. It was just the waves. You could hear the waves as the boat was moving. That's it. And as we turned the corner, now we were on Hudson, and right as we crossed the downtown, the South Tower starts collapsing right in front of our eyes. And it was really, really like gut-wrenching to watch that. You know, that rumble with which it just started coming down. If I close my eyes now, you know, I still have it in minutest detail. I still have that thing in my head right now. And people were, by this time, people were on they had all come on the deck and they were just, you know, looking at it with their jaws just split open. They had no idea what was happening.
That's right. I remember, because we were all watching.
Mm-hmm.
We were all watching by that time.
Yeah.
Every one of us. And what happened over time was then you started getting the vantage points, like from your vantage point. There were cameras, like a camera would show up later on the news or something like that. And then, I mean, for constantly watching that. What was it, weeks we sat
and
there?
And you were in the military.
So. Oh, yeah, I was ready to rock and roll, man. I was primed up. Mm-hmm. I was right when I came in.
He was in
I
training.
I just finished up, yeah, the bulk of my training.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can't even imagine the spirits in the military at that time.
I can't believe it. I mean, we were... That's what I'm talking about.
Well, that's however, why those guys are still in. I mean, Marcus had to medically retire, but most of his friends are still in today because that incident right there, the attack on the towers, fired up all of those guys so much that they are staying in this 20-year war.
The amount of pressure that came through those towers that hit y'all reverberated over to us, and it was so powerful that them dudes, we run until we break or die. They won't come out. I remember that day, our generation, because we were standing there training up when they hit us. It changed. Yeah, oh, yeah, man, we'll never forget that.
Yeah.
No, sir. It's
amazing.
So you're on the boat. Everybody's just in shock. I mean, it's just shock at that point.
Everybody's in shock, and the boat was just, it was a boat bound to a place called Weehawken in New Jersey. I didn't even care. I didn't even, of course, not that I bought a ticket to that place. I was just going with it. And once we got there, I realized what had happened. There was, of course, the emergency, that the first responders were there. And, you know, slowly reality started sinking. And now the motivations of the attack were a lot more clearer. The Shanksville was, it just happened, you know, in a few minutes after that. So it was like, this is a dream that I could not wake up from. You know, it was that feeling that what's next? Like three attacks of like two attacks that happened, third one that failed. Pentagon had not happened then, but you know, what was next? Like everybody was just talking about what was next. And this feeling I very distinctly remember, it persisted in the mind, in the consciousness for days to come. That okay, some 9/11 happened and now it's 2 days, but what's next? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's been 5 days now, a week, but you know, what are they planning next? Like people were scared to take the tunnel. Or a bridge, because there would be rumors that on the next they are planning an attack on the Lincoln Tunnel, on the Holland Tunnel, thinking of flooding it, and all these things were like constantly being. So there was like a fear, you know, mm-hmm. a fear psychosis had just gripped everyone.
Someone told me recently that fear is God can't exist where fear lives, and it's. So true. Like whatever your higher power is, like light cannot exist where there's darkness. And it's like that time period was so dark and evil, and it just swept through the city. And that's what fear is. Fear is darkness.
And metaphorically and literally, the sky was, it had a very weird light during that one whole week after that. Perhaps it was all the stuff that was in the air or whatever, the pollution, smog. Mm-hmm. The evenings looked different. The you know, the horizon looked different.
Yeah,
it looked like a dark era, literally.
It almost galvanized us into one unit, like prepping us. And then 20 years later, the feelings finally came out, and it's almost like a. As we're coming out of this in the 20 years, we're coming out of a pandemic, so everyone's sick and tired. And then you realize, you know, that we've been in a fight for 20 years. And at the end of it, I mean, it's like that. I mean, you could pull it together, lace it up like that. It's all one big deal. Because it was. It's like that era got dropped into it and then started spreading from there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Oh my gosh. So... did you go back to work? There was no place to go back to work, but
no place to go back to work, but you know how financial services are. I mean, there's always an opportunity. Every crisis is an opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So I actually got on a bus and went south to North Carolina. where my girlfriend at that time used to live. I just wanted to go away from it. But very soon we were asked to come back. In a few days, we were asked to come back, and a command center had been set up to kind of, you know, move on. You know, that's the thing about the city of New York. It forces you to be so resilient so quickly. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't give you time to sit and lick your wounds.
Can't even take a breath up there, man.
Yeah.
Yes, can't take a breath.
Well, and did a lot of your coworkers pass, or did they mostly get out of the tower?
Fortunately, everyone I knew was safe. Okay. You know, but I do know people who knew friends that had lost their lives.
Gosh, I'm sorry.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Because in the beginning, when the towers first hit, it was just like any regular explosion. The fireball came out,
yes.
Right, and that stuff kind of got dropped in. But when the towers came down and that dust think of everything that was in that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like somebody came over top of New York City and swept it.
Mm-hmm. You could not see New York City.
No, I know.
Days.
We remember watching that go down. You could, because they would shift camera angles from like the top, like looking for like Godzilla rolling through there or something, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of thing. I only say it because I watched that the other day, and it kind of reminded me of, man, when it was weird because the flame came through and then that dust, that gray freaking ash dust, man.
There was something nefarious.
Imagine
about it.
Taking your vacuum cleaner or your shop vac and throwing that sucker through New York. I mean, like that. Mm-hmm. But thick? God dang, man. When y'all came out of that.
I know. Seeing the camera. Like
everybody's people, shade. Everybody was that gray.
Yeah, that white dust on their face and stuff. I mean, all of the pictures. We like to go to the 9/11 Museum when we're in New York City, and just all the photos and videos and everything that they have on display there, it's so impactful to see that. And I'm so glad that that museum exists for the kids that weren't alive during that era, our kids. It's so important that they see that.
Oh, man, we got over everything so fast. You talk about getting over some stuff, make us all one color, right? I mean, quick.
There you go.
I mean, when we walk out, I'll never forget it.
Yeah, weeks after that, or even months, everybody was American. No matter where you came from, like anything, everybody had their flag proudly out.
Yeah, so what happened, man? We got so close that we had so much fun and built something in 20 years, we got upset. It's weird. It's like almost being in a dream, but not being in one.
Yeah, everybody was red, white, and blue.
What a time. What a time, right?
That's best. Yeah, what a time. Huh?
So how did you recover from that? That had to be emotionally really hard to just wrap your head around that you were in the center of that.
It was a very interesting feeling in my head. Now that I look back, I call it interesting because it was such an opposite forces, a mix of forces. On one side, I was feeling lucky. I was feeling grateful. That I had made it out. I was feeling that I had a new lease on life. It's like, okay, I just have some bonus time now. And that made me think, all right, whatever I had come to this country to do, I had to go after with even more force. I had to go after whatever I was chasing, you know, all the more, with all more gusto and more energy. But on the other side, there was this part of me that was saying, "But what's the point? You know, what is the point of doing this when it feels so ephemeral, when it could just you know, you could just poof, you could just disappear
Oh, you mean snatch it away from you like that? Yeah, that alchemy.
Yes. It was so fragile, like how you said earlier. It's what's the point of building this whole house of cards when just a breeze, a gentle breeze could just knock it all off? And is it really worth it? So I was on one side, I wanted to apply that hard gas pedal. On the other side, that distinct lack of purpose or whatever it was, a disinterest, was applying that hard brakes. So it was a weird vacuum that I experienced, a void that I experienced. And I was not going anywhere.
Well, that's like the center of the hourglass, isn't it? That's like getting pulled through one or pushed out of one and pulled into it. You're getting pushed and pulled while you're getting pulled through on the other side, man. That's that stall point. And you can only get pulled out. You know what I mean? It's like, when do you normally pull this out? When everything is rocking, that's the hardest time because most people won't. There's got to be a position at which that happens when we have to go through a primordial, proverbial, whatever shift. You know what I'm talking about? Yep. And to get us all on the same page real fast, I think that's how the boss does it. The good Lord works in mysterious ways. And we shift into something, learn how to operate it. We just keep going, keep learning, keep loving, right? That's it. And what you say is that, man, it just has to make you work harder because this thing keeps growing. The one thing that's absolute down here that always changes is life. Like day to day, she rolls in. It's a different pattern, so we don't ever get bored. The one second you think you got it figured out is probably when something's about to shift on you.
Yeah. How did you end up controlling your mind to go down the path of being more positive and wanting to live day by day instead of worrying about the deck of cards collapsing?
I did not know any better, to be frank. I just did in that moment what I kind of was, what I knew in that moment, which was just I started distracting myself. You know, when you don't know what you're doing, you kind of want to just shy away or run away from that feeling. And so I started literally running away from it. And I just started traveling the world. I started changing jobs to find some, you know, adrenaline, you know, at professional front. I started, you know, I even started taking, you know, aircraft lessons to fly a plane to find that thrill, you know, just to experience something. But every time I would do it, all right, it gives me a little high, and then I come back to the same place. Then I go somewhere else. I raise the bar. I do something even crazier, right? A little longer it would last, and then I come back to the same place. So it was like I was in that state of distracting myself and coming back to that state of void for a few years, actually 2 to 3 years. And I just, it was very exhausting.
I bet.
It can be, especially if you're in tuned in how focused you are, because that perpetuates it. You just keep looking for stuff, keep running away. It's like, you know, it's kind of like, all right, what are you doing? Oh, I'm killing time, stalling, whatever. You know, there's the path set. And the more you there's that temper to where the big road turns into the merging road before it opens back up. And funneling through that, man, it also gets fast. It may seem like it's getting slow, but it's not. It's actually you're speeding up time for the perspectives, right? You know what I'm talking about? It's completely different. And
exactly. And that's dizzying, you know, that speed.
Yeah, zing. Thank you. That's right. That's what I was trying to say.
So what was the hobby or distraction that really caught your attention and that you moved forward to?
It was travel. I picked up learning to learn music, you know, culinary, you know, sports. I tried everything. You know, I quit my job. Like, it was a very promising career at one of the top investment banks to join a, you know, a startup, because, you know, that's cool, right? And probably thinking that, yeah, that would bring me some joy, some fulfillment.
Yeah.
You know, so when I look back, I was doing everything what I was conditioned, my mind was conditioned to do. There was certain patterns based on which I knew how to respond to a certain situation. And knowingly or unknowingly, I was just, you know, flowing with that. I was afraid of asking the real questions, the hard questions, and to stay with that feeling. I could not stay with that feeling. So I was just trying to run in all directions.
I think we all do that when we've been in a stressful situation.
I mean, you grow up with your friends and you think whatever, you know, if you get along with them famously, let's go do whatever it is that they want to do. In all actuality, when you're a kid, you're all different. That's when you're the most different. Really? I mean, you don't even know what you don't know about yourself. And then you go in those directions. I was the same way, man. Once she got a hold of me, learned how to cook. I mean, I was doing things I would have never done, bro. Being in the kitchen was one of them. And I'm talking about to the point to where I was honing in the details from the spices to everything. I tried to cook. If anybody else could cook it, I was going to learn how to cook it.
He was plating perfectly. Everything looked like an artistic.
Start reading stuff. Whatever hit my interest, it would pull me in so hardcore that I couldn't. I knew that's what I was supposed to be doing. And then when it wasn't time for it, I couldn't even focus on it. It would shift and drop like that. And I never could understand what was happening. Ultimately what I looked at, I was like, sometimes when you're going through your path, you can get through it pretty quick. It just means you're going to have to spend a little time on the other end of the front part. And you know, it's a give and take. It's a learn. It's that whole, like that hourglass effect that you see. Because each time you go through it and you come back up, you're learning something. Or charging a weapon. I was talking to a buddy of mine. It's like when you pull the charging handle back, you're like, okay, you're cycling that thing back. You think it's done. It was like, no, it's when you let it go. It's when it rams it forward. So you've loaded it, and then you pull everything back to charge it, and then you send it back forward, and that's when that sucker goes. And that's the beautiful part about life. And it's you need people like yourselves to go through those moments that we do to remind people of it. Because life, man, can suck you in there and capture you and drown and keep you down. I mean, keep you way down there if it wants.
But that's the funny thing about it, Marcus, that did I have to go through this to understand this? I mean, should life be easy?
What a great question. That's the greatest question right there.
It obviously did, because you were so caught up in your bubble of being successful and doing, you know, the Wall Street thing and, you know, focusing in on that you weren't thinking about anything else, and it just, that wasn't the plan. You needed to experience more, obviously. How did you get into meditation?
Oh, that's another story. You know, a friend of mine told me that his teacher is visiting New York, and he said, well, you've tried everything, you know, just try this meditation and breath work. And I'm like, you know, man, this is not for me. You know, I've tried it. It doesn't work. I try to close my eyes. All these thoughts come. I've tried to meditate. It doesn't work for me. Plus, meditation is something, you know, I'll do it when I have a lot of time, when I retire, when I'm done with my responsibilities, and when I'm, you know, I'm sitting on a chair watching my grandchildren. That's when I'll sit and meditate, right? So that was a notion I had in my mind about this whole concept of meditation and breath work. But he didn't buy into my resistance and says, no, just come for me. And in a funny sequence of events, I ended up there. And as the first time when I meditated there, I experienced this state of mind without thoughts. And I did not know what that was. I did not know how to deal with it. I perhaps thought it was, I felt asleep. I thought I'd been working long hours, so I felt asleep, or maybe it was a placebo effect, or maybe there was something here that I can't relate to, but I did not take it on its face value. I mean, this Wall Street training forces us to not accept anything on its face value, right? So I was the left brain questioning skeptic guy with high guards. You know, and I was like, no, this is, I don't know, unless there is, show me the data, where's the science? You know, so I did not accept it on its face value, but there was experience. Every time I would then try and do it, it would settle my mind down. It would stop the otherwise chattering, constantly racing, planning, thinking mind. It would just, it would bring some coherence in it, and it would just quietly, you know, help me feel that calm. And that's how it started. That's how my journey started. And then lo and behold, I started doing some research. And there was a lot of scientific data behind this sky breath, this practice that I learned on that program. You know, it helped with the actual emotions, how it helped scientifically. And when I learned all those things, I'm like, oh yeah, there's an experience and then there is actual science behind it. So maybe I should explore deeper. Maybe I should learn more about it. And that's how my reluctant and curious pursuit started. I really took baby steps. You know, every step I would stop and look around what people are doing, question it. And like how you said earlier, this is early 2000. There is no smartphone yet. You know, there are no meditation apps. Nobody's talking about breath work or meditation. It's almost like a taboo. And so I was not comfortable owning it. I was like, even if I do it, I'm not going to share it with others.
Right. Yeah.
People will think I'm a hippie, you know? So, So I kind of kept it to myself but I kept going towards it. I kept going deeper because there was something in it, which I knew was for me that I was looking for.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
That's a brilliant way of saying that. And as you get older, people are like, oh, I'll do this after I get kids and I'll get on the front porch in a rocking chair and I'll do my meditation. That's not what that's reflection. All right. And your body breathes. Like, you breathe without thinking about it. That's a real thing. It does it for you. When you breathe for your body, what do you think it's going to do? It literally has to run everything else. So when you take the time to give it a break to do that for it, it opens up these patterns that you can't believe. It's mind, body, and spirit. Those three things run together. I talk to people, it's like, all right, you're a body person. Why do you go to that gym? Why do you study that martial art? Well, it does this for me. It runs with my body. This, you know, I like the tradition. I was like, all right, so what about your mind part? Why did you go to that college? Why did you go to there? Well, this college, I love this part and this and the other. Right, exactly. Your spirit. Why do you go to that church? Because it does this for my spirit. The breathing is so critical. And I was the same way. People are like, hey, go over there and meditate. So I just go sit in the corner and be like, you know, what am I supposed to do? I don't even know what that means. And I mean, up to the point, like, not recently.
Yeah, we were watching the Kundalini yoga teacher.
It's like, yeah, you can do the, and it's people who, it's a difference between people who study martial arts, all right, without a teacher, they can get good at it. But if you go in and actually sit down and let somebody teach you how to do it, it's completely different. There's a style to it. It's got a pattern. Like, the apps, they're great. I use those every day, actually. And when you start doing something for your body and you start breathing for it, and there's those different breath levels, like the patterns. So when you imagine when you go for a run and there's a breathing pattern you get when you're in your flow. If you do that when you're sitting down, you're working your body out. You're putting it in there so your body doesn't have to. And you can still go do your things, but it is an actual give and take. That's why they're separate. And that's why you can change it. You can let it run itself, or you can run it if you want it.
He doesn't look like he does breath work, does he? But he does.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell he's experienced it. He's speaking from experience, not just something he's read.
Let me taste it, man. I've been underwater, drowned plenty of time, to the point to where if I didn't have control of that, and I still lose it. I can get into a situation where it takes me a while to settle it back down. Imagine your breath is a spirit, like a wild horse, right? And if you start bucking it inside of it, man, you get in control of it, sometimes can get tough. And that's why the voices are there. That's why you get the chemical reactions, just to calm that one thing down. The breath is the one thing, and it creates and does everything.
And perhaps now it's more obvious, but back then, I had no idea that how it works. And of course, I did not have a formal training like you have had, Marcus. So when I learned that connection between that breath and mind, it opened up a complete new dimension to my awareness. Because, you know, what I realized is that they both are intimately connected.
Yep.
Like how you said, your breath is like a wild horse, but why? It's because your thoughts are like...
Yeah, it's riding it. Exactly.
Riding it, right?
If you haven't taken... If anything fires you up and gets your attention, like yoga or whatever, this will do the same thing in a different capacity, but much, much more. And I wouldn't say, I was the same way as you. I don't, so, do you meditate and breathe? I'm like, no, you know, I'm a tough, I work out. I don't have to do it. I was the same way, bro. I didn't want anybody, and I consider myself to be a humble guy, but what is humbleness? It's been like, yeah, hell yeah, I meditate. I pray all the time. I go to church. You know, that's open humbleness right there, right? But I don't know if that comes with age or you're embarrassed, because when you try to explain it, people are like, oh, yeah, go meditate. What the hell does that even mean? How do you even start? Finally, somebody told me to sit down and feel the air going past your nose as you breathe. Just start with that until something changes. Simple. Until yeah. something changes, because it will. Remember, mind, breath, that's all separate. So if you sit down there and start breathing and automatically expect something to happen, your body's not going to fall for that.
No.
I mean,
no.
It's not going to fall for that at all. It knows. No. It knows even knows what you're thinking because it told itself to do that. It's like you have to get it into that routine. And once you do, though, once you turn it on, you can't turn it off.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because it won't do it because you cannot control your mind with your own mind.
That's right.
Yeah, it's too tricky. It's too smart to
too
know
smart.
What you're trying
yeah,
to
too
do.
Smart. Way too smart.
The minute you say, do this, it's going to run in the opposite direction.
Isn't that great? That's so great. It's automatically designed to do that.
Yeah. And that's why breath comes in, yeah. You know, because breath is that link between your body and the mind.
Yeah.
Because like how you, when you, any emotion you have, it has a reciprocal rhythm in your breath. Have you seen an angry person breathe?
Yeah.
Right? Short and shallow. Yeah. Versus, you know, Marcus walks through the door and you all, it's birthday and everybody says, surprise. you just gasp for the air, right? So it's constant play between the emotions and the breath.
Right.
You know, usually the emotions lead and the breath follows. But then the beauty is, like how he was saying, if you turn it around, you focus on that, the horseman, you learn to modulate your breath in a certain way, then your mind follows.
Yes, perfect. Just like a surprise party. If you
want to
feel like that every time, however your breath was when that freaking jolted you, that's what you do. That's how you get that stallion bucked up. And those breathing patterns do that. It's not, most people think it's in, no, no. It's whatever state of mind you're wanting to get into is how that regulates. And you know that because of the reactions it has, not only when it's doing it by itself, but when outside influences cause it. And
totally.
If somebody would have explained that, you know, every time I start to say that, I'm like, man, I wish I would have known that back in the day, then I would have missed something else probably. If I was busy breathing, then I probably would have, you know what I mean? It's like the minute I thought, if I'd have been good at breathing back in the day, well, then you would have turned out this way because that would have been, I'm like, all right, whatever. But
so how did you get super into it to actually study meditation and breath work?
You know, it was that reluctance sort of gave way to curiosity. And, you know, I was just like, there is something in here that I really want. I do feel good. There's a peak experience that consistently delivers. And it started impacting and showing in every aspect of my life, you know, how, and my wife and I, we both started doing this together. So that was another thing, you know, she also used to be on Wall Street. We used to lead very different, busy lives, living like roommates. So this was the first thing we started doing together. You know, that so it was like it gave us something to work, like a common thing to follow together. So I started exploring it, you know. So I'm a kind of guy, if you say, prescribe me and say you have to do it, this is a process you follow, I would run away from it. You cannot tell me to do one thing. But if you just leave me alone and say, all right, do it if you want to, and if I see that benefit in it, I'll keep looking around. If nobody's there, I'll keep going towards it. So that's how I started going deeper into it, first reluctantly and then just being plain curious, like, oh yeah, let me see what's in it. Let me have an open mind and see what's in it. And the benefits were very clear. My focus improved, you know, the sleep got better, there was a calm, there was a stillness that I began experiencing. And I was like, okay, I was still working on in financial world. And you know how you've probably seen in the movies when things get animated on the trading desk, people started shouting and screaming and throwing phones and, you know, swearing like a sailor.
That's real, right?
Those kind of...
That really happens, right?
Right? That happens. And I would be part of it, usually. But that one, I very clearly remember this one afternoon when something like that erupted. And I was just calm about it. And I was watching it, but I was not, I was in control of myself, control of my emotions, which otherwise would have given way. And then at the end of the day, when we were in a bar, my boss comes to me and says, "Are you smoking something? I want something. Like, you were very muted today. What's happening? Are you okay?" And that's when I realized, only thing that has changed in my life is this breathwork has come in. And perhaps I'm more in control of my thoughts, my emotions, how I respond to situations than I used to before, where I would just react. Now, instead of reacting, I'm aware and I'm responding. So that was the first time I realized this thing had something in it. And then I kept going deeper into it.
Wow. That's so neat.
It is. It's like letting your body take a breath. And you think, I'm sleeping, I rest. I'm like, no. Growing up, I was fascinated with the correct Mr. Miyagi. I teach my kids, I do the Miyagi way. Like, I'm out there busting their butts. They're working their, but they're going to learn something. And he always said, breathing, very important. Make sure you do that. But until somebody actually explains it, just like you said, and breaks it down to the, and I know this sounds ridiculous, and I can't believe we're talking about this online. I still kind of feel like that. I'm like, all right, we're actually talking about the breathing part. All right, let's do it. It works. It's a real thing. You know that because the first thing you do when you check on board planet Earth is take a breath.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And I mean, it's in everything. It's air. We were referring to this. It could be in a solid, a liquid, or a gas, right? It's kind of with water. It's everything you're breathing. It's a flow state.
It's a total flow state.
It's a complete flow state. And when you don't take the time to just come off the gas, right, a little bit and let that sucker breathe, and you can step back in it. I mean, there are things down here that are designed for that. Some of us are designed for that. Race car frames, big old freaking lungs, man, we can go. If you learn how to articulate that and move through that, then, I mean, you can operate it at a completely different level, I guess is the best way to say it.
Man, absolutely.
The more anything can breathe, the more it flows, the better it runs.
So at physical level, that's how it works, right? Another thing that's secret that I learned, and of course now science has validated that also, which is this whole science of impressions, you know, and you know it better than anyone else. Whenever you go through a life event, whether you are on the front, whether you are with your loved ones, whether there's something that you enjoy or a loss, in your life, it leaves an impression on our subconscious. Right? It creates a little scuff mark, like a lesion on our nervous system. Let me give you an example. You know, every morning, let's say first time you've had your coffee in the morning, you love that coffee. Next day, you want that coffee because yesterday was really nice. Third day, another coffee. Now, fourth day, you don't find that cup of coffee. It's 8 a.m. You already run towards the kitchen, but there's no coffee. Something in here feels there's a discomfort because that impression has been formed on your nervous system that it's 8 a.m. and I want coffee. Right? So it's a very innocent example of an impression, but it's like a conditioning of the mind, the pattern that cow path has formed in the mind. And deeper the trauma, deeper the event, deeper the significance of the event, you know, harder the scratch. And what this breathwork does, this sky breath that I learned, it cleanses the nervous system of these impressions. You know, I still remember for the longest time after 9/11, if there would be a loud noise somewhere, like a construction truck dropping like a big plate of steel, or a burning smell somewhere. Or when I travel, I remove my shoes. It just takes me back to that morning. Why was that? Because there was that impression I had formed from those experiences, which would not let my mind be. Anything it's associated with it, it takes me back to that event. And that would create discomfort. That would create all sorts of ailments in the body over a longer period of time if not handled it. The one way to mask the symptoms would be by popping, you know, pills. But that is just curing the symptom. It's not really addressing those lesions that are already in the system. But what this breathwork did, the sky breath, was it's like using a sandpaper to remove these impressions and smoothen it out. And when that happens, the memories are still there. You know, if I close my eyes today, that whole morning is in front of my eye like a 4K HD movie. But it removed, it loosened its grip. It removed that negative emotional charge that it carried earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it say way, like if your mind, it's kind of empty when you come in, and then throughout life you put furniture in it. Those are as you kind of clutter everything up, and through the breathing you can clear all of that, and the memories actually become photographs, and you put them on the wall, right? So you can just kind of gaze at them when you're creeping through there, but it's still open. You're open and the past flowing, and that's a beautiful way to. That's another great thing is hearing the different ways to explain it.
Mm-hmm. What's it called? What's your practice called? Sky breath?
It's called sky breath meditation.
Sky breath meditation. We'll have to look that one up.
I'll be on that one here in a minute.
Yeah.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You know, it's very interesting because I now, over a period of time that I learn, I volunteer with this foundation that teaches. And eventually I also, over a period of time, I got on the board because I wanted to make a bigger impact. It's called the International Association for Human Values. And we have a program for veterans.
Oh, wow.
Called Project Welcome Home Troops. And we teach the sky breath to veterans who come back from the front. And you know how these memories and traumas and all that kind of, you know, is in the mind, you know. And I have so many, like my friend, dear friends who are instructors, they say, like, I've heard amazing, amazing stories of transformation where, you know, having trouble sleeping, there are these things, sounds that shake them up. And this one experience of the sky breath and kind of, you know, brings that lightness, brings that relief from all these traumatic, deep impressions. So I would love to, you know, introduce you guys to that at some point.
Oh, yeah.
We would love to hear about that.
Yeah, let's get you out here.
What?
We already got a file on you, bro. I'm right here.
How do people, like, find or study sky breath? Is that on a website or YouTube or an app or what is it?
Yeah, so you learn with an instructor first time, and then you can practice it using an app or on your own. You get a take-home practice, but you go to artofliving.org, the Art of Living Foundation, where they offer this technique. You go to Art of Living and they, you know, on the website, you'll see sky breath meditation workshops listed. You can do it over the Zoom now.
Are there school? So I was like schoolhouses, dojos. What do you call it? Is it just all over?
Like a meditation center?
Yeah, a meditation center.
Probably.
I don't know.
There are meditation centers. There are a few big ones, like there's one in Boone, North Carolina, there's one in Los Angeles. But nowadays, you know, people are not so comfortable, you know, breathing together in a closed environment.
Right. So, yeah, exactly.
So we just
breathe in the
Zoom
same
now.
Air as each other. How do you even get into that situation where you don't like each other and we don't even breathe the same damn air?
The COVID.
Right.
That's so amazing. How did you decide to write your book?
You know, it was just one day in that moment of gratefulness. I felt like I finally had the strength to talk about this, to share my story. And if that can help someone, then probably, you know, I would consider myself lucky of having made that small difference somewhere. So I never talked about this for a long time. You know, a lot of my friends who I made friends in the last 6-7 years, when they heard about the book, that's the first time they realized that this is what I've been through. I never talked about it much. But I felt like something within me told me that I just had to write this. You know, I had to put it out to the world. And if one person can experience what I have learned, what I've experienced, that would be awesome.
Well, and I mean, a lot of the people that listen to our podcast listen because we share stories of perseverance or just getting through
adversity.
Which
means there's nothing strange or out of bounds, you know.
Right. And usually it's just, which doesn't discount anybody's story at all, but it's, you hear their story and you find strength in that. With yours, you're actually giving a solution to do the breath work. And it actually, it's scientifically, like you said, there's data behind it that if you do this breath work, you can manage your thoughts. You can manage a better pathway to move forward, no matter what you've been through, whether it was a divorce or an abuse or whatever the circumstance is.
I mean, if the sky's falling down around you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get watch all your friends die, if you get thrown down a mountain. I mean, like I we go through the numbers with it, but it's
right.
There's a few things, more than a few, that have been around since we have. And breathing was, I'm pretty sure, the first one. Let me check. Yep, it was. I mean, I don't know how to make it more simple than that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first act of our life.
That's what I'm talking about.
Isn't it?
That's the first thing you do.
Yeah.
Take a damn breath.
But people don't realize that.
And perhaps also the last act of our life, just taking the breath out. But how much attention do we pay to our own breath?
Yeah. Well, people don't realize that your breath is a healing mechanism. They just think of your breath as a natural, you don't think about it, movement. But if you control your breath, it can heal you.
It's like a weapon, and the tongue is the trigger. You load that sucker up with vibrations, throw it out. You know exactly what I'm saying when I say it. And if I shift my tone or my breath inflection, that's what that is. When you inhale that load, you load that sucker up and throw it right back out. I mean, if you want to break it down to what it really is, that's how we communicate. That's how everything moves. It's like, just like the fish get carried in the water, birds get carried through the air. We kind of get carried through our day. And I mean, you can communicate in it. So it's powerful. That's why we have it.
And you're a martial arts, you train in that. I mean, they talk about chi, right?
Yeah.
That subtle life force that carries us. I mean, subtler than the breath. And that's where it comes from. Like from time immemorial, people have paid attention to it and have unlocked the secrets of that.
Yeah, you can measure it. Scientists show that. I mean, measure it.
Absolutely.
I mean, for anybody to say that the part doesn't exist, we're at the point now where, like, hey, if you think this doesn't exist, and we'll try to educate you, but then for further than that, I can't help you. You know what I mean? You're just trying to be hard-headed, I guess, because it's real, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Totally.
Thank you again, brother.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your story.
I look forward to seeing you, man, meeting you face-to-face. We'll do everything we can to back you up and promote you and talk about you. I'd love to sit down and learn something from you.
So how do people, like, get your book? Do they follow you on social media? Do you have a public platform like that?
Yes, I'm on social media. I'm forced to be even more active now that I've written a book. But I have a website. It's my first name and last name.com, kushalchoksi.com. There's a link to get the book there. And this book is just, I poured my heart in it. It's just my brutally honest account of a skeptic, somebody who's a non-believer in this, with his journey through this breathwork and meditation.
There's different levels of that, right? There's the non-believers, and there's the I don't knows, and then there's I wanted to check it out, but then I got hit hard, and I don't have anything to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think I'm asking this because I would like your perspective on it. A lesson that I've learned going through life, and that is, that's going to happen. Right, but just be kind of mindful and optimistic about some things and give them a chance, because sometimes we get into positions where, and I'm so guilty of this, like you learn something that is applicable to the new thing that you're going into, so it kind of puts up the barriers and the walls, but in reality, that's the best part, is just to let everything go and go into the new one. I know nothing. The minute I think I know something, I don't know anything, let's go do something new kind of deal.
Absolutely. And what helps is effortlessness. You know, I think, you know, the language of body is effort. You know, you want to make these muscles, you have to resist it. But the language of mind is effortlessness. And what I realized was I was doing wrong is I was applying effort to my mind.
Wait a minute. Explain that again. So with the body to build the muscle, we have to have the resistance.
You have to have the effort. right?
Well, and the resistance. You have to have the resistance to build muscle for the body. And is it the same way as the mind?
It's exactly the opposite. You have to let it be. You know, have you tried to not think of something?
Yeah, all the time. I wind up thinking about everything.
Exactly.
That's why I had to start breathing.
So mind doesn't understand effort. And wherever there's an effort involved, mind resists, rebels, and bolts out of it as soon as it can. You know, that's why people pay money to go to gym, but they don't end up going there. Why? Because there's effort, there's routine, and there's like, I'm done with it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you were to teach Marcus something in the next minute of how to do this sky breath, what, give him a little lesson.
Well, a minute might be too little time
for sky breath. Or a micro time.
But we could do a little appetizer if you...
Let's do a little appetizer.
Well, yeah, so the question was like, there's with everything when you teach something to somebody... And I'm a firm believer in if a child can't learn something, the teacher's not doing it right. You just hadn't explained it to him because there's a way. You actually say something, explaining something, that it becomes so relative and so easy that it just pushes everything out of the way. And those are usually unique to the person going through it. Everyone has their own little cool little like moment, like, hey, this is how I figured this out, bro. And this is how it helped me. If you got one of those,
we want to hear your little nuggets of knowledge of meditation. Like, what's the first starting step on meditating?
I'll give you three rules for meditation.
Okay.
Right? The first rule is I do nothing. It's easier said, but...
That's so hard. You said do nothing, right? Just do nothing?
Next 10 minutes, I'm not interested in doing anything. I'm not interested in finishing this podcast. I'm not interested in selling my book. I'm not interested in anything. For next 10 minutes or however long, whenever you sit for meditation, can you just tell that I don't let the world around me collapse? I am just going to sit. I do nothing. Second rule, I want nothing. Just for next 10 minutes. Can you do that? I want nothing. I'm okay. Physically, I'm okay. I'm taken care of. You know, temperature is right. I'm not thirsty. I'm not hungry. I'm not looking for that next pay raise. Whatever. For next 10 minutes, just... put it aside. I want nothing. And the third one, I am nothing. Now, oftentimes we put labels on ourselves. I'm this, I'm smart, I'm rich, I'm poor, I'm dumb. All these labels, I'm a meditator, I've never meditated. All these labels keep us at bay. It doesn't let us go towards who we are. So if you remove those labels for next 10 minutes, I am nothing. So, I do nothing, I want nothing, and I am nothing. With just these three simple things, meditation becomes a happening rather than doing. Meditation happens effortlessly rather than wanting to just force it. Okay, now I have tricked you here a little bit, right? Once at first I said it's an act of effortlessness, but then I said, you have to do these three things.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. At what point would that's the rub, right?
Right.
That's the rub. Okay, I get it. All right. That's what that makes complete sense.
Well, I get it.
That's a difference between effort and effortless. Like it's like when you want to get on the train, right? You buy the ticket, get on the right platform, you carry your bags and get on the train. But once you're on the train, what do? You just sit and you let the train carry you.
Remember when we were kids, you used to love to go out in recess and run around and crawl on the monkey bars? You used to love to do that. But if you get older, they say, go outside, run around and crawl on the monkey bars. Like, what? What's a workout? Why would I want to do that? So go take it all the way back to that. Say, I get to go do that as opposed to I have to.
Exactly.
It's a little brain reset.
It's a
whole meditation thing. A lot of people... knock it and say, like you said, it's for hippies or it's for...
She's like, thank God I get to meditate.
Whatever, but it's really a brain reset and it's a healer.
Not sleep, none of that. Yeah. This is like one of those little gifts you give yourself.
Mm-hmm. And we can sit here all day, talk about it, you know, but it's like, if somebody has never had a had a banana, how do you explain the taste of it, right?
Right.
All right, it's sweet, it's soft, it's nice texture, but you can't really convey the experience, right?
Oh, so, man, it, even if you tried to say, hey, you got to open it from this end, it's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
What is that? What is that? Ah, that's true. That's true. It's even harder for me. I agree with that 100%.
So I would say just take out that 10 minutes. You know, I think we owe it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. That much we owe it to ourselves, especially in the world we are in right now, because everything is moving so fast. And all that's happening around us, pandemic, this, that. I think we owe that 10 minutes to ourselves to go deep and connect within, you know. It's not a luxury anymore. I think it's a hard necessity.
Yeah. Sure. I'll have to incorporate that in the, ever get into a position of power. It's like, all right, mandatory. Every other country has tea time, like a siesta, time to relax. Besides us, right? We don't have one.
We have zero relax time.
Mandatory recess.
Right? mandatory reset, college, because it's for the adults.
That, I'm okay with a tea time and a meditation
and
time
a reset
and a recess. Oh, I mean, I'll take all three. <three. laughs>
No one likes to be in the office or outside during the hottest part of the 3 o'clock hour. So we're just going to make that one the mandatory part and get in the hammock or somewhere.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. We really appreciate it. Your time and coming up on the 20th anniversary. It means a lot to everybody for different reasons, but we are praying for you during this time because every year has got to be difficult as the anniversary approaches. So
I'm sorry I had to go through it. We all had to go through it together. Each one of us had a part. Like, you got the initial hit, and then I came. You know, we came in after you. We got hit. It's the whole thing made us all one big family.
Yeah,
we are all connected at a much deeper level, and more so because of this event. Because it's like. It's like a river. We are all in different parts of that of that river, but we're still, it's the same water
that's
flowing through.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, brother. Take care of yourself. God bless you, man. We'll be in touch.
Thank you, guys.
We're going to get you out of the city and down here to the country sometime.
Yeah, we live in the country.
I'd love to come and spend time with you guys and breathe together. But
yes.
I'm deeply honored to be here. And once again, thank you for everything that you do on the scenes and behind the scenes.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right.
Thank you.
Bless
you. Bye. Kushal, thank you, man, so much for joining us on the podcast today. We absolutely had a blast getting to learn a little bit more about you, your story, and just kind of what it was like from your perspective this 20-year anniversary of 9/11. If you guys want to read his book, On a Wing and a Prayer, you can get it on his website, kushalchoksi.com. That's KUSHALCHOKSI. .com. He's also available on Instagram. You can check him out there, learn all about the stuff he's doing. He's really incredible. If you guys liked this episode of the show, make sure you share it with a friend. Follow us on social media, teamneverquit.com/social. And as always, we will see you guys next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.